if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 231. This is our 2022 Alfred Dunhill Links and Sanderson Farms Championships Tips Podcast. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selections for this week's DP World and PGA Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit beatgambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews. We have previews for both events this week. Sanderson Farms strokes gained analysis. Tournament form statistics. We've got form charts, including combined course with current form. And our PGA Tour and DP World Tour predictive optimizers. All of these features, like this podcast, are completely free of charge with no paywall. Paul is at Golf Betting. Steve is at, I'm at Bamford Golf. And Barry is at Good Talk Golf. That's on Twitter. And subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where this podcast is available along with my weekly golf betting show. I've done a golf betting show for the Sanderson Farms this week. Now, you guys, as listeners, power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Now, as I've been saying the last few weeks, we are short in the reservoir for reviews, so any five-star reviews, you can spend the time, 30 seconds, to write for us. You're probably going to be read out on next week's show, so keep them coming for me. Right, five stars is the title of this review. It's from Memphis Graham. I take it he's in Tennessee, in the United States of America. Thank you, gentlemen, for the insight and the humour. I particularly enjoy the post-it note of shame. May we have an updated list for Steve's post-it note? He also says, and this isn't the view of the podcast, this podcast is much better than Mayo and Feinberg. People write it, I read it. That's all I can do.
Controversial.
Right, my post-it note of shame. In fact, most of them are playing this week at Sanderson Farms. I've omitted Cameron Tringali because he's disappeared to Live Golf. But just having Cameron Tringali on the post-it note shows you that that's a guy that's never won a PGA Tour event. Those are the kind of players, you know, players that are in contention and are like, they're not very good at converting, and the kind of players that go on the post-it note of shame. Right, the current post-it note contains, oh, I've also taken Paul Casey off, because he went to Live as well. Austin Cook, Emiliano Grillo, Russell Henley, Luke List, Denny McCarthy, Patrick Rogers. You have noted that all six of those are playing in the Sanderson Farms this week.
Yeah.
Adam Scott, although I did tip up Adam Scott a few weeks ago, but I did say at the time it was purely for his each-way return, and it came in. And Brendan Todd. Those are my players on the PGA Tour post-it note of shame.
Mm. What's Brendan Todd ever done for you, Steve? Or done to you?
He had that explosion, didn't he, 2 years ago when he won back-to-back.
Mm. That just annoyed you that he won those two events.
He went back-to-back. I then tipped him up to go back-to-back-to-back, which, looking back, was probably a step too far, and he clearly missed the cut or something like that. Whenever I tip up Brendan Todd, he tends to be the sort that gets in contention and then in round four disappears.
Mm.
Or, like he did the other week in California, shoots a low round over the low round on Sunday, or a couple of low rounds from the cut line, and grabs a T9.
Yeah.
He's very good at that as well, Brendan Todd.
Yeah, I did notice he popped up a little bit recently. So he's one of those you can kind of try and pigeonhole to a certain degree, a certain style of course. But, he certainly hasn't hit those heights as you described when he hit one of those two back-to-back events. What's that, 2 or 3 years ago now, isn't it? Time flies.
I get confused with COVID, but yeah, I think was it 19?
Didn't he go close in the third one though?
I think I tipped him up at the RSM, and he was right in the mix on the coming into Sunday, yeah. And he went backwards. Yeah. Don't forget as well, there was that tournament, that WGC at St Jude, because he loves St Jude, doesn't he, Brendan Todd? As does Ches Reavie, two short hitters.
Yeah.
And I think he was leading after 36. He was in the final group on Sunday and then shot like 9 over when he realised he was almost got a chance of winning a WGC. Mm. I think that's kind of Brendan Todd. Graham in Memphis, thank you for your 5-star review. As I said, any 5-star reviews this week would be much appreciated. Be that in America, the UK, Ireland or Australia. We're not fussy. We have lots of people that listen in those various countries. Let's talk quickly about last week. Clearly, the United States won the President's Cup. It was probably closer than people anticipated.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit of excitement.
Although they were winning, was it 8-2 after the first 2 days?
Mm. Yeah, trading at 1.01 at the time, so it looked like it was
It's almost as if someone at the PGA of America went into the team room and said, "Can you make it a bit tougher, boys? Cause come on, have the Saturday off, because otherwise everyone's going to turn it off by the end of Saturday."
There was a brief flickering moment where it looked like the internationals might just get back into it, but just didn't quite happen in the end. But yeah, it was tighter than many anticipated, even though it was still, what, five point difference in the end, I think.
It ended up being a very entertaining few days of golf in match play format, which is just what we want as fans. It's a pity the internationals just didn't get out of the blocks so early, because once they got past those first 10 matches, they were extremely competitive.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun to watch. So,
what did you think to Greg Norman wishing the international team the very best of luck, Barry, on Twitter? What do you think to that?
I mean, Twitter is a space for people to say what they want unless they get shut off. So, yeah, I mean, if he wants to say it, so what?
Do you think it was a little bit tongue-in-cheek?
I'm sure it was. Like, I mean, it's just at this stage, it's just hilarious, because the Norman is like the pinnacle of Liv, will just use any opportunity to insert themselves into the conversation about any subject. So it's the words come off like meaningless these days from a lot of their players and him. Just disingenuous and, yeah.
I thought these numbers were quite interesting, and I often think that players that have done well at a President's Cup or done well at a Ryder Cup can take that momentum and potentially win a stroke play event before the end of the year. So Team USA, Jordan Spieth, 5 points from 5 matches. Max Homa, 4 from 4. JT was 4 from 5. We then had Cantley 3 from 4, Finau 3 from 4, Xander 3 from 4. Colin Morikawa was 2 points from 3 matches. So they were the top scoring Americans. Conversely, on the international team, Siwoo had a fantastic President's Cup. 3 points from 4 matches. He won his singles. Sungjae Im won his singles. He was 2.5 from 5. As was Sebastian Munoz, 2.5 from 3 matches played. Cam Davis, Tom Kim. Actually got it right there because I'm reading it off the screen rather than Bob Kim. Cam Davis, Tom Kim, KH Lee and Adam Scott were all won 2 points for their team. So I expect one of those or maybe a couple of those names to pop up somewhere and get a victory. What tends to happen.
Yeah, you wouldn't be surprised, would you? You know, the Tom Kim, I know 2 points probably doesn't fully show the quality of his play, and he certainly got the team going, didn't he? I think he was one of the key components of that international team to get him really upbeat and moving forward. Proper talent, that lad. Look forward to watching him more and more next season.
Did we mention Rasmus Højgaard on the last podcast for your event, Paul?
For France? No.
No, we didn't.
He was well fancied the week before, and as was Guido, who eventually won. I mean, Rasmus, what was he, 5-6 clear at one point? He was odds on at one point quite early on in the tournament last week. Given that it was his first view of Le Golf National, that was a particularly strong performance. And then all started to unravel, didn't it? He hit that snowman on the second hole on Saturday and brought everyone else back into it. But it still took that incredible finish from Guido. He birdied 9 of his last 13 holes on a tough track like Le Golf National to win that golf tournament. That was mightily impressive. So yeah, well done Guido backers. There wasn't a great deal to go on. I mean, as I say, he was very well backed the previous week in Italy, so there'll be, mm-hmm. be a lot of, but yeah, you were on him, Barry, weren't you? I remember.
Yeah, it didn't show enough there to warrant staying on the bet slip. So but I mean, I when things like that happen, I take it as a positive sign that maybe my brain might be functioning in a way that could get me towards a good pick. You know, yeah. At least I was close. So I'll take a little encouragement from that. I mean, that final round, I watched the highlights of it last night. My God, did he hit the ball well.
Yeah.
That approach to 18 was absurd.
Oh, absolutely. Incredible shot under the... you know, in the position he was in, and you know, he probably felt that he needed to make birdie there, and you know, took that hole, and that's a tough, tough hole. There's a lot of players who make bogey or worse on that hole, and he took it on, pulled the shot off, made the putt, yeah, won the tournament. Very, very impressive. And going into the final round, Tom Lewis, who I had back to 80s, was in a very similar position to Guido, and he shot 7 over. he shot seven over, and while Guido was birdie and everything for fun, it's just...
Oh my god! Where did
16 shots differential?
Where did Tom finish up? Like tied for 67th,
114th or something.
I might have mentioned last week. I often forget what I talk about on this podcast, to be honest, and I think most people do. But I did notice because I tend to monitor this top 60 on the Race to Dubai at this time of year. And just for note, Rasmus Højgaard, he was outside the top 60 as of last week, as was Guido Migliozzi. So Migliozzi has jumped 79 spots to 21st, so he's now booked his spot at the DP World Tour Championship.
Yep.
As has Rasmus. So you've got two quality... Also, I saw on Twitter, and when you do go through Graham McDowell's record at Open de France, and you can run through it, there definitely... And Tommy Fleetwood, there definitely does seem a lot of US Open carryover.
Yeah.
Guido, of course. Top 5? Torrey Pines, was it?
He's popped up a couple of times.
Yeah, the US Open's tough. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Potentially one for the notebooks.
Yeah, there's a few people who will be vying for that. I think it's top 50 and then maybe some odd invites or spurious reasons why people get into the field this year. But yes, I expect, as you described, it probably spills over to around about 55th, 60th, something like that, with players who can't or don't attend for the... DP World Tour Championship in Dubai. So, yeah, these bigger events, I mean, particularly this week, again, there's a decent prize fund, so players will be
$5
trying
$5
million. Yeah, you know, in DP World Tour parlance, that's quite a strong prize fund. So
I'll just put this out there. I'm looking at the Race to Dubai standings right now. Eddie Pepperell's on 60. I'm just naming players that, to me, you'd think ordinarily would qualify.
Yep.
Pepperell's at 60, Alex Noren at 62, George Coetzee at 64, You've got Nikolai Højgaard at 66. Good player. Marcus Armitage, 69. Matthew Jordan at 70. You've got some decent players down here that look out of position. Søren Kjeldsen. So Minwoo Lee's another one, 86, meaning. So, yeah, Matt Wallace at 90.
Yep.
So it's coming up to that point, as you always say to me, Paul, it's now or never kind of territory for these guys.
Yeah, and they can, you know, given the points on offer, they can make a massive jump this week if they can have a decent event. After that, it starts to thin out a little bit in terms of prize funds. So, the relative positions they need to finish on leaderboards to really leap up that Race to Dubai ranking needs to be higher in the leaderboard. So it starts to focus minds a little bit, particularly with the Ryder Cup qualifying happening as well. It started well into its process now. So players with any aspiration of making that team will also start to buckle up a little bit and focus their minds. Makes it an interesting period.
I've actually got Nosferatu's projection here for the Ryder Cup. I make no apologies. I know, why are you talking about this already? Well, we love the Ryder Cup on this podcast, so it's just nice to see how these things shape out. At the moment, USA, 6 qualifiers, Scheffler, Zalatoris, JT, Cam Young, Colin Morikawa, Kevin Kisner. I've no idea how Kevin Kisner squeaks into that. Well, he squeaks into it because DJ is 5th in the rankings, clearly won't play. European points, Shane Lowry, Rory McIlroy, Guido. They've only just started in Europe. I believe the Americans are already halfway through their qualifying process.
Mm.
World points, McIntyre, Danny Willett, John Rahm. It does also, and we were talking about this last week off mic, clearly there are going to be some real opportunities, grasps or nettles to be grasped for European players to get in to a new look Team Europe team for the Ryder Cup next year.
Yep.
You know, someone like a Guido, he can get a place, a McIntyre. Even when you look over in America, Seamus Power. Seb Straka. These are all players that can play themselves with the old guard as well, your Francesco Molinaris, Rasmus Højgaard, another clear, Victor Perez. You know, these guys can all fight for a definitive place in the Ryder Cup next year.
Mm. Yep. There's going to be spots available, as you say. There's the old guard kind of cleared drifting out away from that process and those that are involved with LIV too. So it leaves a few gaps that a few players will have their eye on, that's for sure.
Do you think that, you know, let's say the core of our team is very good, let's say the front six or seven, do you think that the opportunity for players outside of that, when they see that, they'd be looking at that going, there's genuinely 4 spots, one of those I could jump into, do you think that helps accelerate their games this year, like we would need them to get up to the level where we'd feel comfortable with them competing against the US next year?
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
Because they do need to jump.
Yes. But
what's the trigger for it?
I know what you mean, because you've had players that have snuck into a team in the past and, you know, they might get one game in one of the pairs and then the singles, and they're just very much bit part players because, you know, the captain doesn't feel overly confident in playing them, and you know there's probably their rookie attempts, and yeah, you know, you want a team of 12 very competent players, really, don't you? You'd be comfortable putting in any pairing and pushing out there at any position in the singles and just letting them fly. It'll be an interesting period because you'll undoubtedly find one or two players who have an incredible year who you'd be absolutely more than happy to have on the team. You know, and as Steve said, you know, Bob McIntyre potentially could have an absolute blinding year. You know, a Matt Wallace, a player like that who goes and wins 2 or 3 tournaments who you'd comfortably have on the team. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing to have these, you know, this changing of the guard, as it's described.
Mm.
I think having just looking at it, having 4, maybe 5 spots that you're looking at genuinely being open open season. Go grab them. I think that might be the catalyst for a number of guys like really developing their games and stepping up to the next level over the next few months.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. I hope that's the case, because then we go into next year at least quite bullish of our chances, rather than going, oh God, we're going to get twatted around the park.
You know, I also didn't mention, you know, old stages like Alex Noren or Danny Willett.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a lot of opportunities out there, you know, for a lot of these players to get into that Ryder Cup team. Even Tom Lewis, Paul. He might need to improve his Sunday performance.
Yeah. Well, let's hope he doesn't improve it this week, because I'm going nowhere near him. But
you know, you've got a young talent like Ewan Ferguson or an Andre Arnaus. You know, players of this capability, they can put together a decent 6 months of golf. Mm. It's all up for grabs, mate.
Yeah. Well, you'd imagine that with Luke Donald playing a lot of these events, he'll be having that exact conversation with these players when he's paired with them or group with them or talks to them, you know, privately, and you know, be saying to them, you know, go and show me what you've got. Go and prove to me you want to be in this team, because there's an opportunity there.
Now, I know this goes against the official world golf ranking formula this week, but I thought we would start with the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship, which to me would be the strongest of the two tournaments this week, although it isn't.
Yeah.
So let's do that.
Yeah, it's another one, isn't it?
It's the more interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I think
it's certainly got the bigger names.
I think, and you know what you're alluding to there is the fact that compared to the Sanderson Farms, the number of ranking points up for grabs is higher on the Sanderson Farms than the Dunhill Links. Yet, if you look at the field and just eyeball the top of the markets, it doesn't make a massive amount of sense. There's a logic there. We've tried to work it out between us, and I don't think any of the three of us have got a degree in applied mathematics to try and fully understand it all, but there must be some logic there. I'm sure someone would be able to describe to us exactly how and why it works. But yeah, let's take the Dunhill Links on face value, because it is a great event, and it's a very strong field, as Barry just described, for our annual trip to the home of golf for this well-established pro-am. $5 million prize fund, as I said a few minutes ago. So it's it's well worth the effort for these players who need these ranking points for this, for next year's card or for the race to Dubai, positions to get themselves towards the Earth course at the back end of the season. Now, the attendee list is strong. Rory McIlroy again showing some support for the DP World Tour. He is the 9-2 favourite. Shane Lowry's back, 11-1. Matt Fitzpatrick's back after his playoff defeat last time out for him, 11-1 also. Tyrrell Hatton, 16-1. Tommy Fleetwood's back playing 20-1 this week. Thomas Peters, 28. Billy Horschel's over, again supporting the DP World Tour, which again has to be supported, or applauded rather, 30-1. Bob McIntyre, Talal Gooch, 33. 35-1 bar those players, but there are a number of recognisable names in the 40-50-1 bracket and beyond. Now, Boyle Sports are supporting this particular event strongly. They've got a 10 places each way option, which, again, from Boyle Sports' perspective, they do like to push the boat out of these big events. So do check out their prices. Coral and Ladbrokes, 8 places each way. And of course, as we've been saying for the last few weeks, Bet365 have their each way extra proposition running. Again, that's 8 places each way, 1/5 of the odds. And differential terms available beyond that for 10 and 12 places each way also available. So check out any of those bookies before you place your bets, because you may find there's a better price and place combination than the one you are looking at on your screen.
I noticed now, that you grabbed three of your 5 tips with Bet365 each way extra.
Yeah, I don't want to favour any particular bookie over another, because I take them all on face value, as we all do, because you know, we're all seeking the best proposition and the best combination. But the pricing and the each way terms from 365 generally is tough to beat. You've got the odd one that's beaten here or there, or you'll make a decision yourself to take a slightly higher price at lower each way terms, but for a blend, yeah, it's they're in a they've got a strong promotion, strong proposition at the moment. Yeah. So well worth a look.
This is astonishing, because the poll of a year ago would not be saying this. He'd be like, I want less places. Well, actually, Bet365 do that as well now, but he'd probably be like, five places, big price, hit me up.
Well, Barry, I'm not totally immune to it. Not totally immune.
What have I done to you?
Because a couple of my picks this week were at lower each way terms, because I couldn't resist the price. But we'll get onto that when I go through my team of five in a few minutes. Now, as ever, we're playing a three-course rotation here at the Dunhill Links. So it's St Andrews, Kings Barnes and Carnoustie. Varying degrees of difficulty, of course. All of them are links courses. St Andrews, the most recognisable, as we know, hosted the Open Championship back in July. Of the three, Carnoustie tends to play the toughest in regular conditions. All of them can present a decent challenge, though, if the weather closes in. And in that respect, I've been keeping a close eye on the forecast, because it has been fluctuating quite a bit in terms of what they expect. Thursday looks fine. Friday looks like there's a lot of rain and potentially wind pushing in from the west. I'm seeing wind in the 20 to 30 mile an hour bracket and quite a lot of rain. So if that does materialise during the playing hours on Friday, that's going to make it particularly nasty. It's going to be tough to play, and the rounds are going to absolutely grind to a halt. I mean, you're talking 6 hour plus rounds anyway, and that's probably going to get potentially close to seven, maybe. We shall see. Over the weekend, it looks quite breezy too. It's 15, 20 miles an hour. Cold mornings, sub 10 degrees Celsius, so sub 50 Fahrenheit in the mornings, and struggles to get much beyond that, to be honest. You know, might get up to the mid 50s in the afternoons, but that's it really. So it will make it a little bit tougher. I mean, tougher conditions doesn't necessarily mean an all-out grind in this event. You know, there is a pro-am. They do put the pin positions in quite favourable positions. And we've seen similar kind of conditions before, and it just means rather than the winning score being kind of 22, 24 under, it tends to bring it down to maybe 15, 17, 18 under, that kind of number. So don't expect it to be an Open Championship, because it never is. That's not what it turns this event into when the weather closes in. It just means it's not an all-out birdie fest. To put that into context, I'll take you through some of the recent-ish winners. 2010 was Martin Keimer, 17 under he won that year. He was a 16-1 shot. Then we've got some longer prices. Michael Hoey won at 250-1 in 2011 at 22 under. Brandon Grace was 50s the year after, same winning score, 22 under. David Howell, 125-1 in 2013, 23 under for Howell that year. Ollie Wilson, 500-1 in 2014 at 17 under. Torbjørn Olsen, 200-1. A lot of long prices there. 18 under in 2015. Then Till Houghton won back-to-back years at 66s. And then 22-1 in 2017. 23 and 24 under par for those two wins. Lucas Beauregard won in 2018 at 50-1, 15 under. Victor Perez on debut back in 2019 at 22 under, 175-1. And then Danny Willett coming off a very inconspicuous form last year. 100-1 for Danny Willett last year, 18 under. It's a mad price. I know you've talked about Willett, Steve. He's that kind of player, isn't he, where you can just back him blindly. And yep. If he wins, he wins. If he doesn't, we saw him pop up at the Fortinet a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? An even longer price, I think, at 125s. And
125s at the Fortinet.
Yeah, could and probably should have won that as well. So
He reminds me of your Jim Herman, Ted Potter Jr. long-term plays.
Yes, just with
although a... Danny Willett is actually a brilliant player.
Yeah,
how many times have you backed Jim Herman at 500-1?
I've not actually been on him the right week when he's done it, but I've eyeballed his numbers and his string of missed cuts in the past and thought that perhaps it's that week. But yeah,
I think we've said all along with Danny Willett, he doesn't finish fifth and then win. He'll miss the cut and then win when nobody's on him.
Yeah, exactly.
And he does tend to win big titles.
Yeah.
Which is why the Fortinet didn't really fit.
You look this week.
He didn't want to win it, but.
No, well, no, he should have won it, shouldn't he? Yeah, Willett this week, 45-1, I'm seeing, or thereabouts. Yeah, but defending champion coming off the back of a very close call on his previous start. What's he do this week? He probably misses the cut. I mean, that might come back and bite me on the backside, that statement, but that's kind of his MO, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some trends that you could grab onto for this particular event. 16 of the last 20 winners had already won on the DP World Tour, or as it was at the time, a European Tour. So a lot of previous winners, not many maidens getting over the line for the first time here. And I understand that. It's a big event with a big prize fund and a lot of prestige. So it can lend itself to players with more winning experience. 13 of the last 20 were won by either Great British or Irish players. So a lot of local, you know, homegrown or localish players getting over the line here. 8 of the last 13 winners had a win in the current or the previous season. So some recent enough winning form seems to be good. And 8 of the last 13 again had a top 10 finish in this particular event before winning. And quite a few, you'll find if you have a good look through the event stats, quite a few of the winners here had a very close call, a second place finish or thereabouts in the Dunhill Links before winning. So having a good taste of what's, you know, of getting close to winning this event and then going on and getting a subsequent victory seems to be a way that a lot of players tend to get over the line here. Now, stats-wise, the data is only captured at St Andrews, so there's relatively little to work with. There's little bits of strokes gain data. There's little bits of traditional stats data as well, but do bear it in mind if you're searching through any of the data this week. It's St Andrews, so you're not getting a full view of how players performed at Carnoustie and Kings Barnes over the years. Generally, though, and it's links golf, you need to hit some greens, you need to scramble well, particularly if the weather does close in a bit. Big greens as well, particularly at St Andrews, so you need to avoid three putts. That tends to be the order of the day, really. You know, the combination of just playing well from tee to green, and if the conditions are tougher, just make sure that you're playing well enough on and around the greens. In easy conditions, the putter needs to be red hot. I mean, to be getting into the 22, 23, 24 under bracket, then you need to be making the putts. But conditions this week, yeah, as I said a minute ago, I think that the winning total will be a good few strokes down on that, half a dozen or so would be my kind of guess below that top level. Very recent incoming form is not the be-all and end-all here by the looks of it. I mean, Willett and Perez in 2019, both of them came off missed cuts on their previous start. And Perez was also a debutant, which kept him off the radar a bit, even though there were some local ties which came more generally out to the golfing public after he'd won that event. But generally, as I say, if you've got a decent result in the past, it doesn't tend to hurt. The other point, I guess, is you've got this situation where Thursday is going to be relatively placid. Friday could be particularly nasty in terms of weather. We won't see the draw until later this evening on Tuesday here in the UK. So there could be some draw bias there. You could argue that you want to get Carnoustie out of the way on a decent day. So playing Carnoustie on a Thursday may be the trick. But Kings Barnes can be quite tough in the wind. And we've seen before, you know, some of the Open Championships where we've had some wind and rain coming through St Andrews. It's been a tough course to play. So, you know, I think all of them could play particularly tricky on Friday if that forecast weather really does come through. So, yeah, ultimately, particularly with a bit of wind over the weekend, I think a little bit of experience around here could be the way forward for trying to pick out who you best picks are this week. Now, looking at the top of the market, we've got the same dilemma really that we had at the Italian Open and at the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth, because we've got Rory at the top, we've got Matt Fitzpatrick just below him. Both of them really short prices. I mean, Rory 9-2. Again, it's a win-only price for me. He gets so close. He's come close a number of times, both in Open Championships and also Dunhill Links events here at St Andrews without getting over the line. And I can see him in the mix again, but if he finishes second or third or fourth, that's no good to anyone in terms of a bet. So I'll leave him alone. Matt Fitzpatrick, again, can you really discount him? could and perhaps should have won last time out. Shane Lowry, if the hangover's subsided, which I expect after a couple of weeks off, he'll be back into the swing of practicing, and he's playing some fantastic golf before he won the BMW PGA. You know, any of those three guys, if they're playing well enough, could go and win that. But I've gone for a couple who are just below those three players in the betting. Firstly, I've backed Tyrrell Hatton, 16-1 with the 8th place option at 365. He's won here twice, as I said earlier, 2015 and 2016. He's also finished runner-up twice. Seems to be something in this format, something in these surroundings here at St Andrews, which brings the best out of him. You know, he's a fiery character, Tyrrell. We know that, but it brings a certain level of serenity. I wonder if it's the pro-am element. I wonder if playing with people, it kind of keeps a lid on his temperament to a certain degree. Might be famous last words, because we might be seeing him snapping clubs before at the end of Thursday.
No, I get that. But I think he feeds off the energy of people around him, though, and banters with it and enjoys it. So, it makes a lot of sense.
There's something there, isn't there? To see him have performed so well in this event and this format in the past, there's got to be some logic in there somewhere, I think. Recently, opened with a 72 in Italy before, that was pretty lacklustre, really. He fired 9 birdies on the Friday to get himself in the mix. Shot 65 that day, eventually finished 8th, which was much better than some of his finishes earlier in the year. Saying that, 11th at the Open Championship here at St Andrews, and a few half-decent efforts on the PGA Tour as well. It suggests to me he's not really that far away. And in Italy, 4th for strokes gained off the tee. I've gone through his record. That looks to me like his best career stat on the strokes gained off the tee ever recorded. So something's working with the driver. 9th for greens and regulation, 8th for scrambling as well. And combination of those three, it looks like a decent combination of stats coming into this week. And a player that has got the ability to take on those boys at the top of the market, Tyrrell Hatton. He knows how to win here. Knows how to beat these players when playing his best golf. So quite happy to take a chance on him at 16s. Quite happy to take a chance also on Tommy Fleetwood at 20-1. Now, Tommy's also got a fantastic record here without quite getting over the line. He was 5th here in debut back in 2011. Never missed a cut here. And got another top five finishes, a couple of runner-up finishes as well. 7th last year, really, really strong record at the Dunhill Links. And for me, I'd be super surprised if he doesn't get one of these Dunhill Links trophies at some point in his career, potentially as early as this week. 4th here at the Open in July. He was also 4th at Renaissance as well. Missed a few weeks after that following the passing of his mother, as we talked about at the before the BMW PGA Championship where I backed him. Now, he opened that week at Wentworth with a bogey 364. It looked like everything was going swimmingly at that point. And then we all know what happened there with the Queen's passing. Tommy, well, you know, you don't know how any of those things individually affected people. Drifted down the leaderboard after that point, shot a couple of 73s and, you know, was an also-ran at the end. But certainly some good signs. Loves this event. And there's a good bit of form there after a good few weeks off. So perhaps Tommy can pick it up and really make a concerted effort to get his Ryder Cup campaign off to a good start this week. Matt Wallace also similar position in terms of, you know, that he should be super motivated for the Ryder Cup. I backed Wallace at 80-1. He's one of the players I was talking about, Barry. I backed him with 6 places each way, a 5th of the odds, because I wanted that 80-1 price point on Matt Wallace. Generally, you're getting 66s or less if you're going for the extended place option. But that was with Unibet yesterday. And as I say, Wallace should be super motivated. And given the points and the prize fund up for grabs, that should, you know, this is going to be a good title for him to win in that respect, I think. Some decent, good, you know, some good links form in the UK and Ireland over the years. And progressive form here, 58th, 28th, and then 15th last time he played in 2019. Played over in the Fortinet on his last start, 21st. That's decent enough. 14th for strokes gained off the tee, 12th for strokes gained tee to green. Decent enough long game stats. The real spark, though, was at Cran-Sorcière back on the DP World Tour a couple of weeks before. He forced a playoff that week with Thriston Lawrence, as you may remember. His putter, short game, both of them that week were absolutely red hot. So combine that with the fact that his long game looked good at the 40 net, I think he should be super motivated this week. I think Wallace will feature this week, I really do. Another one who interests me, and again, another one I've taken a price on with less each way options, is Adrian Ategi. I took 90 to 1 on Ategi with Unibet 6 places each way, a fifth of the odds. Now, Ategi, I've looked. I looked at Travis Smythe, who was he won over in what was it, Taiwan last week. He's the first live golfer to win a regular event with regular world ranking points since the advent of live. And I wonder if Ategi will take some inspiration from that. You know, the bubbles. You know, the maiden's been burst in that respect. Effectively, someone's got over the line in a regular event. And perhaps there'll be a glut of these live players returning to their respective tours and competing and contending as we move forward. We shall see. Now, in terms of Smythe and Ategi, both of them have played 3 out of 5 live events. So they're kind of similar status in that respect. They're not starting every single live event. Ategi, though, when he's been playing on the DP World Tour, has been playing some nice stuff. He was third at the Hero Open at Fairmont St Andrews a few weeks back. 13th at Wentworth, 13th also last week in France. And he's that kind of accurate sort who blows hot and cold with his irons. Good off the tee, not always great from with his approach play. Third for greens and regulation last week, though, in France. That, for me, is particularly noteworthy about a player like Ategi. Best of 27th here at St Andrews, but he's won at Fairmont St Andrews just up the road back in 2020. That was in cold, damp conditions. Shot 23 under that week. I think he can draw on that experience and potentially get himself into the mix this week. And finally, longer price. I've looked at the conditions and I thought, well, the forecast here could get worse than it is at the moment, particularly over the weekend. And if the conditions do turn decidedly nasty, then a really experienced hand could gravitate up the leaderboard. And I've gone for Padraig Harrington. I think Padraig really could go well this week. Twice a winner here, twice an Open champion, as we know. Plies his trade mainly on the senior tour now, doesn't he? Been absolutely mopping up on that tour recently, though. A couple of regular season wins on the seniors in the last few weeks. Also won the senior US Open. He was second in the senior Open Championship too. Playing some really tidy stuff. And I don't think he's gone past the point of being uncompetitive on the regular tour. I mean, fourth at last year's US PGA Championship at major championship level tells us that. I think when the course and conditions suit, he still believes he's competitive. I think he's still competitive. So who's to argue? 140 to 1 with 8 places each way, Harrington this week, I thought was a punt worth taking. So that's my 5. Harrington, Ategi, Wallace, and Tommy Fleetwood, and of course Tyrrell Hatton at the top of the list for me. That's my 5. Barry, any fancies from you for the Dunhill?
I'm with you on Harrington. It'll be a slightly easier setup, which he's used to from the Champions Tour, and can handle the conditions.
Yeah, make that 3 of us.
Yay, there we go. Sink or swim together, boys.
Full house.
We're all on Harrington.
Yeah, God damn. I really hope he goes okay here, because I'd hate him to go onto Steve's post-it note.
I wonder if there's... He rarely plays on the PGA Tour. Maybe he's going to make the Ryder Cup team this year.
Oh, man, there you go.
Let's not over-egg it. Harrington, if the weather turns bad, that's a guy that finished 5th in a major last year in windy, horrible conditions by the coast of Kira Island. So he's winning majors on the senior tour. So, no brainer.
And even the regular events, he's just popping up and mopping them up, isn't he? He's playing some good underlying golf, and you get the right conditions for him, get the right kind of course, and one that he knows he can win at. I think he can be a feature this week.
Agreed.
Anyone else there, Barry?
When it comes to the pro-ams, I generally stay away from the top end of the market, because I just find it a bit trickier to figure out and whether they'll actually go that well that week. So I'm going to continue with that couple of outsiders. I'm going to take Richie Ramsey.
Yep.
Winner only a few weeks ago. Don't need to say much more. playing at home, so could go nicely. So I haven't placed a bet yet, but somewhere around the 100, 110 to 1 is, depending which each way I will take.
Yep.
And
just
then,
on Rich, just on Richie,
yeah,
he has that magical second place finish, which, as I mentioned in the preamble, a lot of the winners here, if you go back through, a fair number of them had a second place finish at some point back in their history in the Dunhill Links. And it was 2014 that Ramsey finished second here. So, yeah, I can see the logic, Barry. Really can.
I mean, 10th and 17th here the last 2 years. Mm. And for somebody who's six starts ago has a win on tour, he's over 100 to 1. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
And I'm taking a similar kind of thought process. Another Scot who won 5 tournaments ago and has won twice this year already, and he's 100 to 1. It doesn't make sense. 17th here last year. It's Ewan Ferguson.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Pub was on him last week, so that's a great
perfect
bet.
Then. Unbelievable.
Week after Itis, mate.
Yeah.
I might actually take all of my stake money off Ramsey and Harrington, just lump it on Ferguson.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to see him pop up. I was close on Ferguson, but yeah, I got burnt on him last week, and I expect he comes back and burns me this week. We shall see.
You got Migliozzi'd. Yeah. Let's see what happens.
It's early days, but we've watched a lot of golf over the years. Where would you think Ferguson's ceiling is this year, coming over the next 12 months? Is he in the same kind of ballpark, ceiling-wise as a Robert McIntyre? Although, clearly, McIntyre's 2 years down the track.
Yeah, I don't know. He's certainly one of the young, upcoming talents who, if he continues to win and has that ability, not just to top 5 and top 10, but to get himself over the line. And don't forget, he could have easily won a third tournament a few weeks back as well. He was super close before Ollie Wilson nailed those 2 60-foot putts on the back nine. Otherwise, he'd have won 3 times this season. And to win 3 times on a regular tour on any season is impressive, you know, even for a senior elite player. So I'd be fascinated to see how he goes, but over the next 12 months, because if he carries on that same trajectory, he will find himself on the Ryder Cup team, or very close to at least. We'll see.
One other I'm thinking of, and we've he's been playing phenomenal golf recently, and his odds have now, because a few of the bigger names have arrived, his odds have drifted out. Eddie Pepperell.
Mm.
50 to 1 and above. What, I know he's probably came very close to making your list. Why did he get left off?
It's just, Eddie's got himself into some good positions when I've been backing him over the last few weeks, and it just hasn't quite pushed on, and it's just been a little bit frustrating for me. There's no reason why I would say don't back Eddie, because he could turn up and decide that this is the week where he really wants to perform. At the end of the day, you set your stall out with a certain number of players and be done with it. I've gone for the guys at the top, but yeah, Eddie was on the shortlist, absolutely.
I mean, I suppose all you can do is put yourself in the position to maybe have a hot Sunday, and he's had, in his last 7, I'm looking at here, he's only finished outside the top 20 once.
Yeah. Oh, he's been super consistent, yeah, and he knows he's playing some good golf as well, so... I couldn't put you off. If you fancy him, give it a go.
Lock it in. Pepperell, Ferguson, reverse forecast. We're good.
Absolutely. What about you, Steve? So you're on Harrington. Any others catch your eye?
I mentioned Southgate last week. He's just outside this race to Dubai. Top 60.
Yeah.
Had a decent enough season.
Yeah.
We always say a sniff of sea salt. Southgate also had a second here previous years.
Yep.
So I'm taking 100 to 1.
Mm.
I also took last night 40 to 1 on a guy I mentioned earlier on, again, outside that DP World Tour, top 60. Second on the PGA Tour 4 outings ago. He's finishing the top 17 here, 5 of his last 7 appearances. Third in 2012, Alex Noren.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see Noren going well.
Ryder Cup year, I think for him, in his, I think he'd like to get himself to the DP World Tour Championship just for visibility, to show that he's playing good golf. Because someone like Noren can make a Ryder Cup team, as we've seen in the past. So, and we've always said, I never fancy Alex on anything bar Bent or Fescue or Poana.
Mm.
It's typically Northern European for me. Yep. So yeah, I think this week will suit. I managed to get seven places each way with Betfred.
Yeah. No, again, I had a good look at him. The only thing that put me off slightly was his long game stats.
Yeah, his numbers don't look great, but...
That's kind of how he rolls. And when you turn up at a place like St Andrews, yeah, where the dimensions are bigger,
exactly,
you're going to hit more fairways, you're going to hit more greens. And if your long game is struggling, well, not struggling, but isn't quite up to the kind of metronomic levels of some other players, but your short game's there.
His short game's fantastic. Yeah. Around the green and putting of late. So this is it. If he's going to hit more dance floors because of the size of the greens, yeah, I think Noren's got a decent shout this week. And you'd look at him afterwards, go, oh, yeah, Alex Noren at 40-1.
Mm. Yeah.
DP World Tour level. Ryder Cup qualification now kicking off. Yeah. So, yeah, Noren for me.
Yeah.
I was trying to find that sort of 100-1 chance as well. That's the guy like last year, like Willett, someone of that ilk at a good price. But I've been scanning and no one's really jumped out at me.
No, said, there wasn't much. Me. There wasn't much in that bracket. I mean, if Joachim Lagergren had been playing a little bit better, I'd have been tempted on him because he's got a really strong record here. The one I came closest to was Peter Uihlein at 150-1, who's finished second here in the past and was second on the Live Tour in his last start as well. So there's some good form there. Mm. And again, he's that kind of player who can get away with a little bit off the tee here, given the dimensions, particularly of St Andrews. But yeah, in the end, I just settled for the five. But some solid picks there, lads. I can see a few of those getting in the mix. So we shall see.
Sanderson Farms time. Let's do it. You can't say it's one of the highlights on the PGA Tour, but it's an event I don't mind, actually. It's something you can get your teeth into, I think, as a tournament with some trends, and they're the ones that I like. Country Club of Jackson. It's a 7,461-yard par 72. Completely different to what we're seeing at St Andrews, naturally. I classify it as a resort golf course, and it's long in distance. Five holes have water in play. Tree-lined, but I wouldn't classify it as classical. It gets quite specialised with the agronomy, and I think that's an angle that we can look at. Fairways are Bermuda grass. Rough is Bermuda grass with zuija. 2 inches in length, the rough, so nothing major. Greens are 6,200 square feet, so fairly chunky. They feature Champion Ultra Dwarf Bermuda grass. Steve, wouldn't it be great if you could give us a list of the golf courses on the PGA Tour that feature Champion Bermuda grass? I always listen to the people, boys. Here they are. Congaree, 2021 Palmetto Championship. Just as a reference, they're playing Congaree in a few weeks' time at the CJ Cup.
Yes.
Trinity Forest, 2018-2019. The course built on a dump just outside of Dallas that was a Lynx golf course, apparently, which they never set up as a Lynx. That had Champion Bermuda grass greens. One that's on the tour every year, TPC Southwind. I can hear Barry's sensors picking up when I mention TPC Southwind. We've also got Sedgefield, where they played a Wyndham every year. And Quail Hollow. That was since 2017. So anything past Justin Thomas's PGA Championship victory was played on Champion Bermuda grass at Quail Hollow. So, yes. I'm looking at form charts here. St Jude is a great marker. I mean, Sam Burns finished second at St Jude before winning this. Sergio Garcia has a fourth at St Jude before winning this. Colonial Country Club's another. Burns won at Colonial this year. Sergio Garcia is a Colonial winner. Sebastian Munoz, who won here in 2019, has a third place at Colonial. You could even look at the Byron Nelson, where they've been playing it 2 years at Craig Ranch. Sam Burns finished second at one of those two renewals, and Sebastian Munoz finished third. Low scoring event, resort kind of golf course. I think there's some links to the Travellers Championship at River Highlands. There's definitely links also to Mayakoba, where they play at El Chameleon every November. They're the really obvious ones. Another one, potentially, Sam Burns, of course, absolutely dominates at Copperhead where they played a Valspar. Sergio Garcia has a couple of top seven finishes there. Ryan Armour, who won here many years ago, he has a top six finish at Copperhead. I don't think PGA National is a bad one either. Sam Burns is a top 10 at PGA National where they played a Honda Classic. Sergio Garcia, second place. So yeah, anything with Bermuda tends to help, let's be frank. Sam Burns won here at 22 under in 2021. 2020 saw Sergio Garcia at 19 under. Sebastian Munoz was 18 under. Cam Champ, 21 under. There's a bit of wind in the forecast Thursday, Friday. It's going to be touching 30 degrees, even though we're in going to be in October. We're in the deep south here. Zoysia grass, Bermuda grass, hot, humid conditions, and plenty of birdies. So that's where I'm at. Field, not the best. As we discussed at the top, you know, clearly the field at the Alfred Dunhill looks stronger, even though on a world ranking perspective, it's not. We won't go into the where's and why nots of that. We haven't got time and probably don't understand the world rankings enough. Although Barry was explaining them to us before we recorded this, it's basically depth of field. But Burns is a 9-1 or 10-1 favourite. We then have Sahith Tigala at 20s. This makes me laugh. Russell Henley at 25s. Denny McCarthy at 28s. It's all linking back to the post-it note. And we're then into the likes of Sebastian Munoz. Has he withdrawn? Looks like there's quite a few spaces on this chart. Yeah, so he's a goner. We've got Taylor Montgomery, who I mentioned as a very up-and-coming Corn Ferry grad, who backdoored a top three finish last time out at the Fortinet. And then you're down to like players of JT Poston at 25-1. It isn't really enthralling me. We did mention Scott Stallings, didn't we, a few podcasts ago when he was qualifying for Tour Championships and that he might have a run in the fall. He's a 33-1 chance right now with Unibet. And then we're out to 40-1. Keegan Bradley, Thomas Dietrich, Emiliano Grillo, Davis Riley, Christian Bezuidenhout. Do you want to know any more before we go into our tips? We're pretty tight on time, so I'm sure the listeners want to hear some details around who we're tipping up. I don't know. To me, the one thing that I did know, and this does preclude Ryan Armour, who won this 5 years ago. I will say about Ryan Armour, even though he's particularly short, Ryan Armour's one of those weird guys that you see in the strokes gained off the tee numbers because he's so damn straight, he actually gains in terms of his accuracy off the tee. Often I find him in my top 20 rolling strokes going off the tee numbers, Ryan Armour. But since then, Burns 305, Garcia 319, Munoz 320, Champ 313. Those were their yardages on the PGA Tour heading into this event. I think it suits bombers in terms of winners. So for me, it's been pretty critical that I want guys that are driving the ball long at the moment. Which does actually offer up a couple of decent long shots. One I didn't go for, and one that I could have easily included, is our old friend MJ Daffy, 150-1 available. Because he had a contending performance on one of the start that he actually had here. But I've kept it pretty tight. I'll go in reverse order. Why not? First up, Benny Ann. 75-1. I got 8 places each way with Bet365 each way extra. 4 of my 5, I believe, with each way extra. Bet365 at the time. Ben Am, back on the PGA Tour, fourth last time, hits the ball a mile, and I just love the fact he's got an exceptional champion Bermuda grass green resume. Third at Sedgefield in 2019, 12th at TPC Southwind in 2020. He did a bit of a Ches Reavie there. He was actually second or third heading into Sunday at World Golf Championship level. Found it all far too much, finished 12th. Third here at the Country Club of Jackson in 2019. I didn't expect to see 75-1, 80-1 about Ben Ann this week. I thought he'd have the absolute knees cut off his price. So if we're going down the route of a player who can link together when confident, contending performances, clearly has never won in America, not in terms of PGA Tour level. He did win this year, though. He won on the Corn Ferry in Florida on Bermuda grass. I just thought for a guy that was very high in my predictor model, came out second, I'd grab him at that price. So I'm on Ben Am. I then go into some mid-range kind of players. So I'll stop there. You guys got anything around the 75-1 and outside of that in terms of your selections for this Sanderson Farms?
I've only backed one, but he is in that bracket. And that's Nick Taylor, who won here back in 2014. Not a great deal since that point, but did win the won at Pebble Beach, didn't he? 2020, yeah. I think it was. 80-1 Nick Taylor with the 8 places option with 365. What caught my eye was his effort last time out of the 40 net. He goes through these patches, doesn't he, Taylor, where he doesn't do much and then just pops up. So he was 6th at the 40 net last time out. He shot a 75 in round 2. Other than that, it was really, really good. 67, 67, 68 his other 3 rounds. Had he done anything similar to that in the second round, he would have probably won the tournament. So I thought it was worth taking on there at 80-1. Given, it's, as you said, it's not the strongest of fields, is it? And someone with a bit of experience around the greens and putting looked really good. Second for strokes gained 2 to green as well on his last start. So, yeah, lots to like, I think, with Nick Taylor.
Players, the only one. Players say a lot of things in platitudes in their interviews, but one thing you always read about this place is that the greens are some of the purest greens on tour anywhere. Beautiful greens to putt on.
Yeah,
Taylor's a good putter, has to be said.
Yeah, and I think he could go well. So yeah, fingers crossed.
What about you, Baron? Where are you fishing?
I've won around there, and don't even ask how I came to arrive at backing. But I'm on Dean Burmester.
Yeah, he's certainly a bomber.
Yep.
He can nuke it out there. So, earned his card to the tour. Like I said, the field strength isn't phenomenal. And I'm expecting to see a couple of wins from the Corn Ferry Tour graduates over the next few weeks. This is, strike while the iron's hot. They've got the enthusiasm to be out on tour and they'll see an opportunity to do it. So.
Yeah. Cameron Champ did that here, didn't he? Back in 2018, yeah. I think it was 25th at the 40 net, came here and won that as a Corn Ferry grad.
Yeah.
The one player I was absolutely shocked that I got 45-1 on was a guy that contended and finished second at Southwind a few weeks ago in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Sepp Straka.
Yep.
And I know it's obvious why he's 45-1, because he's played here 4 times and missed the cut 4 times, but Sepp Straka is now in the world's top 40. He's the second highest ranked player in this field. He just finished 7th in the FedEx Cup for the whole season. I think that was worth $2 million in a bonus payment. He was 7th alongside Patrick Cantlay, and he beat the likes of Matsuyama, Spieth, Hovland, Fitzpatrick, Rahm, Morikawa and Sam Burns in the FedEx Cup this year. He's an absolute Bermuda grass beast. He won at the Honda Classic this year, beating Shane Lowry at the end there. I know that you guys have been circling Sepp Straka for a number of weeks on these Bermuda tests. And I just thought 45-1 just has to go in. You just have to place him in there. In a field this week, he's the 9th best European in the official World Golf Rankings right now. He's got all of his 2023 major and PGA Tour invitational appearances safely on his schedule. I think Straka's one of these guys that could, again, be on the, on a medium length shortlist in terms of players that could make their way onto a Ryder Cup team if he keeps playing the way he is. So yeah, Straka, he was 6th at the Tour Championship a few weeks ago in terms of 72 hole scoring. So I thought 45-1, just got to have that. So I took that. 45-1, 8 place each way with Ladbrokes on Sepp Straka. I mean, clearly it's the miscuts, but you've got Sepp Straka at 45-1, yeah, and you've got Russell Henley as short as 16-1. I can't compute that in any way, shape or form.
No. It is purely that record here, isn't it? But, you know, he looks like a different beast nowadays, doesn't he? You know, as you described, the potential for Ryder Cup motivation there with Sepp Straka. And, yeah, you can't deny what he was doing at the back end of last season.
And it's not as if we haven't seen players turn up at events with terrible course form and win. I mean, you mentioned last year Tommy Fleetwood at the Open de France. 3 miscuts, was it? And then goes and wins.
Yeah, 4, I think. Yeah. Just turns it around.
Yeah.
Does happen.
So I took Straka, who can get it out there. He's not short off the tee, is he, Sepp? I also took an absolute beast off the tee, a guy that really showed how well he was playing since his... he won at the Barbasol. Trey Mullinax. You just look at Mullinax. He missed the cut last time at the Fortinet. Poana is not his beast. He's not a Poana guy. You just look wherever, you know, Corn Ferry, wherever he's played well on the PGA Tour, it's all in the deep south. So Bomber, guy that can putt well on Bermuda grass greens. He's ranking 6th in my tee to green across the last 8 weeks. He missed out on the Tour Championship by 1 spot. He finished 31st in the FedEx Cup. So that was, you know, as we've always said, top 30. Top 30 spot would have been all the majors, a huge, huge boast. So I can see why he struggled at the Fortinet, because that must have hurt him mentally. Secondly, he's rubbish on Poana, but I think this is absolutely his track. He finished in the top 6 here last time they played here 12 months ago. So I'm on Trey Mullinax. And if you're looking again at world ranking and you're looking at prices, Harris English at 45-1. I took that again with Bet365, 8 place each way on the each way extra, as was Trey Mullinax. English, you just look at his record, 4 PGA Tour victories, 2 on Bermuda grass, has gone well here in the past. To keep that top 50 position prior to Christmas gets him a Masters invite, and he was 9th last time out of the Fortinet. He struggled this year with a torn labrum. Right hip. Since then, hasn't done a great deal, but yeah, that 9th fast finish at the Fortinet, this is really kind of Harris English territory. Georgia boy, Sea Island resident, comes in motivated, comes in with a bit of momentum, bit of confidence, and a winner on Champion Bermuda Grass Greens at Southwind in 2013. So it's not as if he doesn't get on with the champion. He's got 1st, 10th and 4th last year at the WGC level at TPC Southwind. So I've gone for Harris English, another that can get it out there. And if we're looking at the top of the shop, one player that I've been following and stalking for quite a period of time is due a win. He reminds me slightly of Patrick Cantlay when I got his first ever win at the Shriners Open a few years ago, Sahith Theegala. Whatever stats I look at, whatever 8-week rankings I'm looking at, skill sets, the lot. Even where this guy's done well, Copperhead he's played well at, a number of courses jumped out, and he was the 54-hole leader here last year. So Sahith Tagala, 20-1, I got eight places each way with Bet365. Would not be surprised if he won his maiden PDO Tour victory here this week.
No.
Sahith Tagala.
Definitely a winner in waiting, isn't he?
I think Tagala is. So I've to confirm, Tagala, Sepp Straka, still can't believe that price, Harris English, Trey Mullinax, and then Benny Am. Any others from you guys?
No, not for me. I'm pretty much convinced on Sepp Straka now you've talked him through, though, Steve. I think that's going to go into my my list.
The inevitable question. Are you on the Sepp Straka train? I keep calling him Seb. It's Sepp. Sepp Straka yeah. train.
Do you want to throw us a fiver and I'll put on a little pointy. I'm not sure. I think I like your point, but I hate the fact that he's got four missed cuts in a row here. Doesn't inspire confidence. If he goes and turns it all around into a win, then that'll just be a pretty cool tournament history for him. Mm. I was looking at one other who I've backed a couple of times, newbie out there, Maddie Schmidt. Schmidt?
Yeah, he can bomb it. Schmidt, yeah.
Yeah. So he's up at the 150-1 bracket. So
yeah,
that seems like a bit of fun.
This was the tournament last year, just to back your point up. This was the tournament last year that for the first time ever on the PGA Tour, we saw Cam Young.
Mm.
And we know what an unbelievable driver of the golf ball Cam Young is. There was also Hayden Buckley, who's a good driver, Mullinax. Mm. Seth Reeves, guys that can really bomb it, all got in the top eight last year. And all of those guys mentioned, apart from Mullinax, were actual rookies. So it's that kind of event where some of the names you're not overly aware of will start filtering up.
Yeah, I may actually join you on Mullinax. He was another one that was floating around my head.
I'll sell you, we'll sign off. I'll sell you one last quirk on Sepp Straka. Sam Burns had finished second at the WGC at St. Jude, played at Southwind, before winning this last year at 16-1. Who finished second this year at Southwind in the FedEx Cup playoffs? Sepp Straka.
Hmm. All makes sense.
All makes sense. Misses the cut. That'll be five missed cuts for Sepp Straka at the Country Club of Jackson. Right, it's been a blast, boys. I've enjoyed today's podcast. I hope your bets go well.
Yeah, best of luck, boys.
You too, lads.
We will be back next week. What have you got, Paul?
It's the Spanish Open next week. John Rahm's playing. So
So John Rahm at 3-1.
John Rahm 3-1, Tommy Fleetwood 11s, and then 25-1 the field.
He does love dominating a ridiculously weak event, doesn't he, John Rahm?
Yeah. Yep.
And he does like his home open. I'm trying to think what I've got. What have I got? I've had an absolute...
Shriners next week.
It's the Shriners Open from... We're going to Las Vegas next week, boys. So Las Vegas and Spanish Open action next week. I hope the listeners' bets go well. As ever, 5-star reviews. Please get some done for us. I'll read them out next week. Enjoy the golf. See you soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.